Only a Game is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
Managers, general managers, and coaches are fond of asserting that no player is bigger than the game. According to author Michael Weinreb, they're wrong. In his new book, titled Bigger Than the Game, Bo Boz, the Punky Quarterback, and How the 80s Created the Modern Athlete, for the past few decades, we've been swamped with players for whom the game was just the beginning. When we spoke this week, I began the conversation by asking Michael Weinreb what had caused him to focus on the 80s as the time when the modern athlete emerged.
The reason I picked this time period, I think, is because there were the evolution of a lot of outside factors that helped to sort of create this definition that I've come up with. So when you look at things like ESPN and like Nike and the way that they were able to define the way we looked at athletes, the way that athletes were able to create their own mythology for themselves as well, both through advertising and just through the fact that they had so much television exposure. That sort of led to a different way for athletes to look at themselves, and it was also a different way for the fans to look at them too. So I think that's why I chose this time period specifically.
Well, as you say, you identify the mid-80s as the time when the modern athlete emerged, and one of those athletes was William the Refrigerator Perry, the enormous Chicago Bear, whom Monday Night Football announcer Frank Gifford proclaimed, quote, a folk hero. What led to that characterization?
Yeah, it was kind of amazing the way the fridge just popped up from out of nowhere. He's this rookie who comes into Bears camp. And Mike Ditka is the coach of the Bears, so you have a wild card right there with Mike Ditka. And he decides that he's going to stick it to Bill Walsh because Bill Walsh had used an offensive lineman as a running back in the backfield against him the year before. So he has this 300-pound lineman who, you know, hasn't actually been playing very well, had been overweight in training camp. And you know, Buddy Ryan, the defensive coach, had been, you know, basically been openly insulting him in training camp. So Ditka just decides to put him in the backfield in this game against the 49ers, and it just spirals and grows, and all of a sudden the fridge just becomes this unbelievable marketing phenomenon. I mean, he's doing McDonald's commercials. And the thing is, you know, if you look back then, there weren't a lot of 300-pound guys in the NFL. That was really a new thing. So the fridge seemed gigantic. And it was just this perfect metaphor for where America was, too. I think, you know, we were kind of at this moment where we were fat and happy, basically, you know, and things were going well and the economy was going well and people liked Ronald Reagan. And then the fridge comes out and he's just this giant guy who's eating Big Macs, you know, and it just sort of perfectly fit into that moment in America.
Just not thinking about what those Big Macs are ultimately going to do at all.
Exactly. There was no thought about, you know, the consequences of it, which came later on in the 80s, which, you know, it's sort of that's another reason why I chose this moment, I think, is because you can see the arc of the 80s and then Reagan going from this incredibly popular figure to then the space shuttle exploding and Iran-Contra breaking and the Wall Street scandals all about to happen. And all of that, you know, the same sort of excess and the greed is good mentality really did carry over into sports.
Well, that leads to an interesting question. Could William the Refrigerator Perry have made such a splash in any other time, before or after?
I don't think he could have. I think that entire 85 Bears team was just this anomalous group of guys who just happened to come along at the right time. I think Jim McMahon, the quarterback, was really the catalyst because he really was an organic, authentic punk, you know, and he really just didn't care what people thought, and his dynamic with Mike Ditka was just this perfect situation where you had these two guys who really just went at each other constantly. But it was also just this moment where sports marketing was just beginning to exist as a concept, and so a lot of these guys were big personalities, but they were also able to develop organically. You know, so everything that happened with that team, it wasn't planned. You know, the PR people that I spoke to for that team, they had no idea how to handle all of this. They had no idea what was coming. You know, it just all cropped up all at once. And I think because we're so careful about these things today, because athletes are so careful about their brands today, that it couldn't happen now. And obviously, nobody could have conceived of it happening before that moment in the 80s.
One of the sadder stories in your book involves the football player known as the Boz, because that's what he decided to call himself. Brian Bosworth starred for Oklahoma, of course. Then he was a bust in the National Football League and later in the movies. What earned him the right to be included with the guys who lived up to expectations on the field, at least for a time?
It's partly personal for me. I grew up a Penn State football fan, and so the genesis of this book, if I'm being honest, was the 1986 Orange Bowl, when Oklahoma just beat the tar out of Penn State. Penn State was a very straight-laced program, and they were going up against this Oklahoma team that had a quarterback who carried around a Louis Vuitton purse, and they had the Boz, who was just this guy who had this horrible haircut and was just running around barking the entire game and, you know, playing up to the cameras. And, you know, he had his shirt cut off. He wore an earring. He drove a white Corvette. You know, it was just, he reminded me of what I was seeing on MTV at the time, you know, and it was this sort of new meshing of sports and entertainment.
The guy who seems to loom over bigger than the game more than anybody else is Bo Jackson, in part because he made headlines in Major League Baseball and in the NFL. You write, and I'm quoting now, "America was invested in Bo as the manifestation of its outsized dreams." Were the TV advertising campaigns, the Bo Knows ads, responsible for that level of investment?
I think so. The Jordan television ad, the Michael Jordan television ads, had come along a little bit earlier, but I feel like the Bo Knows ads were really that first sort of perfect manifestation of what Nike was going for in terms of turning an athlete into a mythological figure. And it just so happened that they had this athlete who really was a living, you know, a Paul Bunyan, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where it began. And they just happened. It was just this perfect moment where you had a guy who happened to do all these things that didn't seem humanly possible, but he would do them, we would see them on television. So it was just this perfect moment for him to become something larger than life.
Do you think guys like William Perry and Bo Jackson understood what was happening to them as they were becoming what you call icons of a world in which what they did as athletes was only a small part of their personas?
I don't think William Perry had any idea what was going on with him. It all happened so fast, and I think it was just this moment where he wanted to grab as much as he could. He was a pretty poor kid who had grown up in South Carolina. He didn't really have a clue. Bo Jackson, I think, did know what was going on. He's a very savvy individual, very smart guy. I had a chance to spend a day with him a few years ago, and one of the things he said was that he really looked at his career from a business perspective. He was a guy who really didn't like to practice that much. What he liked to do was basically prove that he could do things that nobody else could do. And nobody thought he could do. And that sort of fit in perfectly with the whole Bo Knows tagline. So I think he was a guy who was aware of a lot of these things in a way that a lot of guys are now.
We're now a couple of decades beyond the salad days of McMahon and Perry and Bo Jackson and the other prototype modern athletes you identify from the 80s. What, if anything, has happened to change the circumstances and the impact of today's modern athletes?
I think the speeding up of media has been a huge factor. I think the fact that we have the internet now and that everything just moves at such a breakneck pace. And I think the fact that these guys are now so conscious and almost overly aware of their image and branding. You look at the LeBron James situation, and I think what's interesting about that is that I think that they were trying to create almost an 80s moment there, you know, this sort of big cultural televised moment for LeBron. And what happened was it wound up backfiring on them. So it's kind of amazing that there can be so much emphasis on branding and on imagery and all the stuff that grew out of the 80s, but yet there are still these moments where guys just don't see what the rest of us see.
William Perry and Brian Bosworth have not flourished since they peaked as icons. Do today's modern athletes seem to you any wiser in managing the circumstances of their celebrity?
It's a good question. I think there are some who are, but I think you still have a lot of guys who come into this who maybe have a better understanding of the basic concepts of how this world works, but there's a lot of complications to it, and there are a lot of ways in which they can lose out in these situations. There are a lot, you know, I think athletes do have a lot more power to, you know, control their image than they ever have before, but there can also be a certain danger in that, and they can be exploited in a lot of different ways as well.
Michael Weinreb is the author of Bigger Than the Game, Bo Boz, the Punky QB, and How the 80s Created the Modern Athlete. It's published by Gotham Books. Michael Weinreb joined me from NPR's New York Bureau. Thank you very much for speaking with me, Michael.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate it.
My conversation with Michael Weinreb, the author of Bigger Than the Game, will be featured on this week's program. With the assistance of neurobiologist Anne McKee, I'll also be examining some of the implications of her study, published this week, of the connection between head trauma suffered by athletes and others, and a newly discovered syndrome with symptoms similar to Lou Gehrig's disease. And we'll have a story about the challenges inherent in the play-by-play broadcasting of chess. So join us, and remember, you can always hear the program at onlyagame.org. You can also find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Only A Game Radio.